Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank all of you for coming here today evening. And we are discussing on the topic of Lord Ram's pastimes, centered on the theme of from misunderstanding to understanding. So this is the second part of the second half. In the first session we discussed about how between Balmi and Sugriva, there was a misunderstanding which resulted because of judging without understanding. Balmi ascribed wrong motives to Sugriva, and thus brothers and friends became lifelong enemies. Today, we discussed in earlier parts from 4:30 to 5:30 about how misunderstanding can result when we speak words without understanding the situation. So on one side, basically in any misunderstanding there are two people. There's one person who does something which the other person misunderstands. Or one person speaks something which the other person misunderstands. There are actions and words. Now we have thoughts, we don't know other people's thoughts. What we can see is their words and their actions. So based on their actions, we sometimes infer their intentions. And based on their words, we sometimes infer their intentions. When we talk about understanding, understanding is a more internal matter. Matter of the head and the heart. So based on the words and actions of people, how we perceive those words and actions determines whether we get a proper understanding or we get a misunderstanding. So I was discussing the incident of Sita being abducted by Ravana, and that we're focusing primarily on how Maricha tricked, allured Sita, and then he sidetracked Ravana. So Shurpanakha had his whole thing going on. She wanted herself to be avenged, and so she manipulated Ravana, and then Ravana threatened Maricha. Either you cooperate or I will kill you. And Maricha, he started thinking, it seems that my time is over now. If I try to trick Ram, Ram will kill me. But if I don't follow what Ravana is doing, Ravana will kill me. He started thinking, if death is going to come, which death is better? Now, is death at the hands of Ram better, or is it at the hands of Ravana better? Now, different commentators in the Ramayana give different imports to his reasoning. He thought, the Valmiki Ramayana describes that, he thought better to die at the hands of Ram. Because if we die in the presence of Ram, thinking about Ram, then we can attain liberation. So at one level, this is spiritual thinking. It's at least thinking that, okay, what is going to happen to me after death? And how I can get the most auspicious death? At the same time, this is, at another level if we see, this is not a very service-oriented thinking. He's thinking that, what will happen to me after death? And he's seeing Ram simply as a tool to get a good destination after death. He's not thinking about the service of Ram. He's actually participating in a scheme that is against, that is working against Ram. So we understand that the same character and actions can be understood from different perspectives. So Maricha had a demoniac element within him. He was a demon. His demoniac element considerably subsided. At least he was thinking about something long-term like liberation. But still, demons are characterized by self-centered thinking. So he was not thinking about how I can serve the Lord. So we see Jatayu also thought. Jatayu, when Sita was being abducted, Sita called out to Jatayu, help. And when she saw it as Jatayu, she told Jatayu that please inform Ram that Ravana has kidnapped. Jatayu said, moving towards Ravana to stop. And Sita screamed to him, don't intervene. He says, you are too old, Ravana is too powerful, he will kill you. Don't intervene. But what did Jatayu think? With that thought, how can I serve? How can I serve Ram? How can I protect Sita? How can I just stand by when the goddess of fortune, while the goddess of fortune is being abducted? So he was not thinking of his own liberation. He was thinking about how best to serve Ram. And what happened? Although he did not succeed in stopping Sita from being abducted, he eventually, by Lord Ram's arrangement, he left his body in the Lord's lap. And the Lord personally performed last rites for him. So actually, even from a spiritual perspective, now we can become very self-centered sometimes. Our focus should be on how can I best serve Krishna. And whatever it takes for serving Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, now if he had been spiritually self-centered, now he could have just chanted Hare Krishna and remembered Krishna and Vrindavan, and he would have gone to Krishna's house. Prabhupada was concerned not just about his liberation, he was concerned about the world's elevation. And that's why he left Vrindavan to come to America and to go all over the world. Actually, to say that Srila Prabhupada left Vrindavan is an incomplete understanding. Because a devotee may leave Vrindavan, but Vrindavan never leaves the devotee. Vrindavan lives in the heart of the devotee. And wherever the devotee goes, Vrindavan manifests. So, in Vrindavan there are Radha Shyam Sundar deities, and by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, here we have Radha Shyam Sundar. So, this is Srila Prabhupada's mercy and dedication of all of you, this is Srila Prabhupada, by which Vrindavan is manifesting here in central New Jersey. So, Srila Prabhupada was not just concerned about his own liberation, he was concerned about the world's elevation. So in that sense, Maricha's calculation was spiritual, but it was not selflessly spiritual. It was spiritual, but it was selfishly spiritual. What will be my destination? Not thinking about how can I serve. Anyway, he came and allured Sita, and I explained how Sita was thinking about, oh, I can have a pet for the last year of my forest, and then I can offer this special deer as a gift to Kaushalya when we return back. And she begged to implore to please get this deer from me. Lakshmi was suspicious, but Ram did not have the heart to refuse Sita. So Ram started chasing. And this deer just would appear, disappear, and led Ram far into the forest. Now all this was a conspiracy going on. Ravana wanted Ram to be so far away that if Sita, when he was trying to win Sita over, if somehow Sita screamed or called out, her call should not reach Ram. So Maricha took Ram far into the forest. And then finally, when Ram realized Maricha is not a deer, it's a demon. It's appearing, disappearing, doing all kinds of mystic tricks. Then Ram decided to punish this demon for having tried to trick him. And he took an arrow and shot. Now this deer tried to escape the arrow. But one of the names of Lord Ram is Amoghasara. Amoghasara means his arrows never go in vain. They never go waste. So arrows unerringly hit the target. And Maricha fell on the ground. Now he had planned it all till the last moment. As soon as the arrow hit him, he was in pain. But he had planned it in such a way that in pain, he started screaming in the voice of Ram, Sita, Lakshman, he called out. Now, you know, this Maricha was not just an impersonator. Impersonator means one who can take on many forms. He was also a person who was a mind. He could mimic many voices. So he exactly spoke in Ram's voice. And because he was a demon, he had powerful lungs. And his call resonated all around the forest. And it reached a place where Sita was there with Lakshmi. And when Sita heard this, Lakshman, Sita was horrified. Initially, although Lakshman told her, this looks like a demon, Sita had not believed him. But when she saw how fast the deer ran away, how far, for how long Ram had gone, she had also started becoming nervous. She was naturally concerned about her Lord. And when she heard this call, she became frantic with worry. She said, Lakshman, Ram is in danger, please go and help him. So Lakshman was unmoved. Lakshman told Sita, don't worry, nobody can threaten Ram. I know his call. Nobody in the whole world, all the three worlds can ever threaten Ram. So Ram is in no danger. Sita said, can't you hear? You heard just now Ram calling out to you for help. That is not Ram. That must be this demon, Maraja. Now Lakshman had been very vigilant. So he knew which were the major demons, and he knew some demons had this capacity to change forms. So he said, this must be the demon who has changed his form. And he is now calling out the voice of Ram. Don't worry, Ram will soon come back. Sita said, no, what if Ram is in danger? We must go. Lakshman told him, no, this is a trick of the demons. If I go, then I will be disobeying Ram. And not only that, Ram had told me to protect him. If I leave you, you will be unprotected. And this is a trick of the demons. He said, no, what trick are you talking about? What is the use of protecting me if Ram is in danger? Go right away. He was frantic in worry. Lakshman was consoling her, trying to console her, but was trying to reassure her. At the same time, Lakshman was unmoved. He said, Ram is in no danger. He says, don't fall for the trick of the demons. Says, Lakshman tried to make her see sense. He says, first this demon tricked you with the eyes. Now the demon is tricking you with the ears. First he came in attractive form. You thought it was a deer, but it was a demon. Now he's coming in a sound. You are thinking it is Ram, but it is a demon. He starts thinking what Ram is saying, what Lakshman is saying. But again, the call for Lakshman, which is resonating in the ears. But what if Ram is in danger? Now, what if Ram is wounded? What if Ram needs your help? What if anything happens to him just because you did not go and meet him? Please go right now. Lakshman said, I will not go. My duty is here to protect you. Sita became so frantic with worry that she said to Ram, she said to Lakshman, word she had never contemplated before. She had never even considered. But at that time, under the frantic state of worry, this burst out, she says. She somehow or the other wanted Lakshman to go. And she said, speak something, anything. She said, now I understand why you came with Ram to the forest. If your intention was to serve Ram and protect Ram, you would be going there to assist him right now. The fact that you are not going to assist Ram when he is in danger, that means your intention was never to protect Ram. You had an evil eye on me. And you were just waiting for an opportunity to get me for yourself. So you know that I always belong to Ram. I will die before I let you touch him. Lakshman was shattered. Lakshman had never even entertained such thoughts. He says, oh Sita, you don't know what you are speaking. The words that you are speaking have cut me more bitterly than the deepest sword wounds that I have endured in you all. Please don't speak such words. Sita was just so frantic with worry, she just did not hear anything. See, when our emotions take control, just get caught in the spell of emotions. She's got nothing. Lakshman, you will never be able to touch me. I will die, but I will not let you touch me. Your evil intentions will never succeed. Yes, we hear this. This is going on and on. And Lakshman just could not bear the words. Just could not bear the words, he said. He did not want to leave Sita, but at the same time, he could not tolerate her words. He told Sita, the words you have spoken are intolerable for me. Therefore, I am leaving. I know this is a conspiracy of the demons. And I fear that when I come back, you will not be here. Please stop speaking this. Sita was just in a state where he just couldn't hear anything. He just continued speaking. And then in despair, Lakshman thought what to do. And he took his sacred weapons and he made a circle for protecting Sita. Told her, please, I'm going for your protection. My duty is to protect you. Therefore, I made a circle. Don't, whatever happens, don't step out of the circle. And then he went away. He charged into the forest. Now, Ram was deep into the forest. And as soon as he heard the demon speaking, Lakshman, he understood what was happening. He understood that this whole thing had been a conspiracy. And he immediately turned around. And started charging back through the forest to come back to where Sita. Because he realized if Lakshman leaves, then Sita will be unprotected. He was running back through the forest. And Lakshman was running through into the forest. And they met in midway. And when they met in midway, Lakshman was still recovering from the accusation that Sita had made. And Ram saw Lakshman. And as soon as Ram saw Lakshman, he said, why did you leave Sita? I told you don't leave Sita already. Lakshman explained to Ram. This was what Sita said. He said, no, you should not have taken her word so seriously. As they were talking, they were just running back. He says, you know, she just spoke something. Why did you take her word so seriously? You should have stayed there. Lakshman was trying to explain. Just couldn't tolerate it. So they charged back as fast as they could. But by that time, when they reached, the whole cottage was empty. And they could see signs of struggle as they saw huge footsteps of some demon and the small footsteps of Sita as she had been running, trying to escape. And they realized to their dismay that they had reached too late. Now ultimately, we understand that Ram, Sita, Lakshman, they are all transcendental characters. And whatever is happening, it's a Leela. It's a Leela means it is done by the Lord, orchestrated by the Lord for demonstrating, for the reciprocation of love, for demonstrating certain pastimes of love. So it is not for us to judge that Sita was wrong in speaking those words or Lakshman was wrong in taking those words very seriously. Our point is, we can learn from these for our moral edification. Madhvacharya, who is Vedanta, the Brahma Sutra Bhashya, this commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, he explains the itihasas can be understood at three levels. He says, first is the literal. We just hear the stories, and just hearing the stories, reciting the stories, that will purify us. In the Valmiki Ramayana, he says, ek ek aksharam bhumsam mahapataka nashanam. Just hearing these stories, one letter of these stories, can free us from great sins. So one is just when you do Ramakatha on a literal level, just hear it, it purifies us. The second level of understanding this is the ethical level. Ethical level means that we study these pastimes to learn how we should act and how we should not act. To get some ethical guidelines. In this situation, what I should do, what I should not do. Now, when we are learning the ethical guidelines, our focus should not be on who is right and who is wrong. Our focus should be on what we can learn. Because these characters, often they are orchestrated by the will of the Lord to act in particular ways. So it's not a question of saying that this character was right and this character is wrong. Rather, what we can learn. That in this situation, this is the right course of action, this is the wrong course of action. But for the Lord's pastimes, the characters are not right or wrong. They are ultimately, everybody is doing the right thing because they are serving the Lord. They are being orchestrated by His will. So we can learn at ethical level what is right and what is wrong. And thirdly, is also at the spiritual or the symbolic level, the metaphorical level. Spiritual level means that we understand this is the Supreme Lord and that He is demonstrating certain eternal principles. So for example, there is a Vaishnava Acharya, Govindaraj, he explains one verse that how Lanka, represents the body. Sita is the soul. And Ravana is like the mind. Lakshmana is like the guru. The Lakshman Rekha is like the guru's guidelines. So, when the spiritual master gives us some guidelines, when we live within those guidelines, we stay protected. But when we neglect those guidelines, then the Ravana-like mind abducts us. It abducts us and takes us far away from the Lord into material consciousness, into bodily consciousness. So Sita was trapped in Lanka. All around, there is water. She could not come out from there. She was trapped over there. Like that, we get trapped in bodily consciousness in this material world. And how does it happen? When we, instead of listening to the spiritual master, we start listening to the mind. And we start taking the mind seriously, acting according to the mind. So, when that happens, then we may get deluded. So this is a metaphorical reading. The metaphorical readings, they can be used to the extent that they supplement the literal reading. Not that they replace the literal reading. The Ramayana is a historical reading. It, long, long time ago it happened, millennia ago. And just as I said, in the first literal level, just by hearing it, we become purified. But additionally, along with it, we can take some metaphorical understandings also. Srila Prabhupada was very concerned about metaphorical readings being used to replace the literal readings. The literal readings are also historical and they are important. Wherever the metaphorical readings can supplement the literal readings, then that is fine. Srila Prabhupada himself gives an example of this in the 10th canto when he says that in Devaki's womb there are 6 children, and then after that the 7th and the 8th child will go. So he said the 6 children represent the anarthas. First, the anarthas go out of our heart, Shadriku, Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Madhamatsarya. Lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, and illusion. These go out of our heart, then Balram represents the Guru. So when these 6 anarthas go out of our heart, then the Guru manifests. And the Guru prepares the heart for Krishna's manifestation. So the 8th child that came in Devaki's womb was Krishna. So like that, Prabhupada also gives non-literal readings, metaphorical meanings. But the metaphorical is never at the expense of the literal. It is in expansion of the literal. The literal is there and the metaphorical meaning is also there. So here, when Sita is, so now we are discussing this past, this particular pastime, this particular lila, we are focusing on the ethical level. Literally, we hear and we get purified. At the ethical level, what can we learn? So quite often, the words that people speak are the words that we speak. Now the words are the windows to the heart. Now, when people speak, we understand what's in their heart. There are windows to the head also. Sometimes people look very intelligent. When they start speaking, they are speaking foolishly. Or sometimes a person looks like a fool. But when they start speaking, they say, it's a very intelligent person. So words basically reveal, to some extent, the inner world of a person. Their head, their heart. So in that sense, words are windows. At the same time, some windows, just like some windows dirty. Then if we look inside, we get a distorted picture. We can't see much. Sometimes in a car there are windows in which we can only see from inside to outside. People from outside can't see what is inside. Or sometimes some speaker people speak in a way that they don't put their cards on table. They speak in a way that other person is like, what are you thinking? They don't understand. So basically the words are windows to the heart. In general. So words, they can foster understanding. But sometimes, the same words can act as walls. Words can actually act as tools for understanding, but sometimes words can be spoken in a way that they can block understanding. Words can become like blocks. And every word that we speak, if there is a misunderstanding between two people, then every word that people speak, the more we speak, the more sometimes the misunderstanding worsens. So every word that is spoken can become like an additional brick in the wall. And the wall becomes thicker and taller. And nothing seems to be able to penetrate it. So basically words can be tools of communication, and words can also be tools of obfuscation. Obfuscation means we obfuscate, block the meaning, confuse the meaning, hide the meaning, distort the meaning. So normally we all need to learn how to speak. To speak, the power of speaking is not so much in terms of fluency. Sometimes we may feel that, oh, I'm not so fluent at my speech. And we may see other people who are very fluent. And we may feel, oh, if only I had this fluency, I could communicate so effectively, I could influence so many people, I could get so many things done. However, in this world, there is no pure blessing. Everything that is a blessing can also be a curse. So sometimes people who speak very fluently, they also speak too much and too thoughtlessly. Because they can speak so fluently, just keep speaking. And sometimes they speak, hey, what did I speak? I shouldn't have spoken that. Sometimes people who are not so fluent at speaking, they need time to think their thoughts, gather their thoughts, and then express their thoughts. And in that time, they realize, hey, maybe I shouldn't speak this at all. Actually speaking, we all have been given a natural protector for our relationships. Now, we all can only hear the words that people speak. We can't see into others' minds. Sometimes you say, if only I could see this person's mind, you know, I don't know what they're thinking. Actually, if we could see into others' minds, you know, practically no relationship would be sustained. All of us, our minds are uncontrolled. You think like this. You think like this. How dare you think like this? So, actually, nature has given us innate protection that we can't look into other people's minds. So, now, what is the purpose of this? That thoughts may come in our mind, but many times thoughts just come and they go. So it's not that every thought that comes in our mind, we have to verbalize it or that we take it very seriously. So people who are not very fluent, now there is a distance, there is a significant distance for them between the thought in their head and the word on their lips. But there are some people who are like, you know, whatever thought comes in their head, there is not even 10 seconds between the thought coming out of their words in their mouth. So when they are like that, they are often quite indiscreet. And then they start speaking, why did I speak that? And sometimes what happens, we speak something and which may be quite hurting for the other person. And then because so many thoughts come in our head and we speak them so easily, we may speak something that hurts the other person and we forget also we have spoken. And then that person remembers, no, how did you know? This person spoke like this about me. And then, you know, after we may go through a lot of heartburn, how could they have spoken like this about me? And then we say, okay, no, I'll forget it. And we may go and say, I forgive you. Forgive you? For what? You know, what do you mean? What did I do to forgive? And you spoke like that. Oh, I spoke like that. I don't remember. It's like, you know, you shot an arrow, it pierced my heart, and you don't even remember you shot that. It can be very outrageous. It can be very, very hurtful for a person. So actually, the words that we speak are like arrows. Once an arrow is shot, it cannot be pulled back. Oh, sorry, no, the arrow don't go to the destination. It doesn't work like that. Once a word is spoken, they are going to go. They are out of our control. So, the words are in control before they come on the tongue. Once they come on the tongue, they are not in our control. They get their own power. And where they will go, whom they will hit, normal arrow will go to a particular distance. But the arrow of words, how far it will go, we can't know. Because we speak to one person, and then they speak to a second person, they speak to a third person, they speak to a fourth person. And nowadays again, with internet available, you know, normally sometimes we may have a normal conversation with someone, and that person will be recording the conversation. You know, and that person tells it over here, tells it over there, tells it over there. It becomes so. Actually, we have to learn to be very careful in our speech. And sometimes we ourselves, when we see, if we get very angry and we speak certain things, and say that person records our speech, and afterward they show this. So, why spoke this? How could I speak this? You know, sometimes I love anger. We speak such things that we ourselves are appalled. Who could have spoken this? So, on our, you know, there are many different traditional sayings in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said that we can learn from different sources. Shuddhi pratyaksham aityaham anumanesh chatushtayam pramanesh vanasthana vikalpat savadaja. So, we can learn from Shuddhi, we can learn from scripture. Pratyaksha, we can learn from practical experience. Anuman, we can learn from inference. Okay, this has happened to 10 people like this. This can happen to me also. 11, it's inference. And one more thing is aitiha. Aitiha means historical record. So in every culture, there are proverbs, there are good sayings. And these often contain some wisdom. So we can learn from there also. So there are sayings in English like words can cut deeper than swords. So actually words can hurt a lot. And so when we are speaking from our perspective, we should always try to be as careful as possible about what we speak. All the more so when we are speaking negative about something. Sometimes some people have done something wrong and we have to speak about it. But when we are speaking negative, especially it is important to be cautious. Because we speak one thing to one person, then we go to second person, third person, fourth person, and may go far and wide. And people can be terribly hurt. So, as I said, when I'm talking about the pastime of Sita and Lakshmana, now we are not trying to here judge who's right and who's wrong. We're simply trying to learn. So, from our perspective, if we consider what Sita spoke, we should learn not to speak even when we are carried away by emotions. At that time, we should try to refrain from speaking. If we speak, then we may speak things which we will bitterly regret afterwards. And so this is from one perspective. So the Bhagavad Gita says, anudvega karam vakyam satyam trihitam chayat svadhyayam visanam chayiva vanmayam tapa uchyate. It says, when we speak, Krishna has many ways in which you can regulate the power of our speaking. The first thing he says is, anudvega karam vakyam. Speak in a way that does not agitate others. There's a lot of agitation in this world already. Everybody is agitated. And when we speak, if we speak in a way that further agitates others, we are simply increasing the misery. So of course, sometimes we may have to speak things which are going to agitate others. But there is a way to speak that. The philosophy also has to be spoken as sensitively. It says, when we are preaching, it says preaching means to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comforted. What does that mean? No, if somebody has, somebody in the family, a loved one has passed away, and then we go there to console them. And at that time, somebody is afflicted, somebody is distressed. So we have to comfort. So the soul is eternal. Wherever the loved one has gone, they are still under the shelter of God. God is with them. If you pray, God will help to console them at that time. To encourage them. That's what Krishna does when Abhimanyu passes away. That's how Krishna speaks to Arjuna. Sometimes, when in the name of being philosophical, what happens is, instead of comforting the afflicted, so that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect is, instead of comforting the afflicted, we afflict the afflicted. That means somebody is in distress because the loved one has passed away. We say, actually everything is temporary. This relative has passed away, others are also going to pass away. You are all alone in this world. A person will get traumatized by that. A preacher has to know what to speak on. So if somebody is distressed, somebody is afflicted, at that time you have to comfort. Of course, there is another aspect also. If somebody is very comfortable, you have to afflict the comforted. That means, Srila Prabhupada, when he came to America, he says, you are young Americans. You think you are very poor, very wealthy, very young, very good looking. Very happy. But Prabhupada will give the example of John F. Kennedy. He says, he had all this more than what he had. What happened? One bullet. It's all over. So his life is temporary. Don't think that your material success is going to protect you. Focus on spiritual. So there is a time when if people are too complacent, we have to afflict them. But preaching means that it's not just speaking Krishna's message. It's speaking Krishna's message in a way that attracts people to Krishna. So what is appropriate at what time, I will immediately understand. Anyway, so the point which I am making is that when we are speaking, we try to regulate our speech as much as possible. And not just give, verbalize whatever thoughts come in our mind. But on the other side, from Lakshmana's perspective, you know, Lakshmana had genuine, he felt terribly hurt by what Sita spoke. But he never held it against Sita. He never told her, she spoke like this, that's why she deserved to be attacked. He never spoke. Even when Ram and Lakshman and Sita went again after Ram won the war, now Lakshman never brought this up. You know, you spoke like that to me. Never. So actually speaking, if someone whom we love, someone who loves us, if somehow in the heat of a moment they speak something, no, we don't have to hold it against them. Something, some words are spoken, just let them pass. If we hold people's words against them, then it makes them unnecessarily defensive and it creates a block in our relationship. So, we don't have to ascribe intention to what is spoken intention. When a person is intention, he speaks certain things. But you don't have to ascribe intention. You must be thinking like this about me. No. Under the spell of anger, we may all, under the spell of anger, pressure, worry, we may speak some things. It is said that anger is like temporary insanity. When people become angry, just what they speak, it's just like, it's insane. Sometimes people just get angry. They speak certain things. So, we, from our side, we should not take people's words too seriously. So there is a saying also, another saying, in English it says, stones and sticks can break my bones, but words can't break me. But this is more in the spirit. Yes, people can speak words. But if I don't dwell on the words, then how much are they going to hurt me? So actually what happens to us when somebody speaks something, we just take it too seriously. Take it too seriously means we keep thinking about it. Keep replaying those words in our head. Oh, you spoke like this about me, you spoke like this about me. One of the favorite fantasies of the passionate mind is revenge fantasy. You spoke like this to me, wait. I will speak something about you. Especially now, if you see on many websites, there is facility for commenting. And in commenting, you know, one person makes a nasty comment, another person comes and makes even a more snarky comment. And this person comes back and he makes an even more nasty comment. And this goes on and on and on. So people get shato nishkritiko lasaha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there are some kind of people in the mode of ignorance, they think expertise in insulting others is a sign of cleverness. The more sarcastic I can be, the more I can cut others with my word, the cleverer I am. Actually, life is cutting everyone. We don't have to add to others' words. Expertise is, as Krishna said, anudvega karma. Speak in a way that does not agitate others. Speak in a way that encourages others. So, sometimes people may speak things. Somebody speaks some words and we keep thinking about it. In general, we all have a tendency to take offense too quickly. Radha, Shyam Sundar, Bhagwan, we have a tendency to take offense too quickly. That means somebody speaks like this. How dare you speak about it? So I'll conclude with three different ways in which we can avoid taking offense because of people's words. First thing is that most of the time, when people speak harshly to us, it's not about us. So something else has happened somewhere in their life, and somehow they are venting out that anger against us. So if you just understand, it's not about me. When Sita made that grievous accusation against Lakshmana, it was not about Lakshmana. She had not thought that Lakshmana is like this. The point was, she felt that Ram is in danger and Ram should be protected. So something should be done. And somehow she wanted to goad Lakshman reaction. So if you just think, even if somebody is speaking something about me, if say our mistake is very minor, there's no mistake about us. And since somebody is speaking harshly, brutally about us, the first thing you can think, it's not about me. Something else is going on. It just happened that I was there at that time, and that anger, whatever was there, pent up from wherever, it just came on me. So that way, now of course, that expression of anger is inappropriate. And that needs to be dealt with. But at that time, if we take it personally, if we take it too seriously, then it creates a rupture in between us. So if you understand, it's not about me. Most of the times, no. If we actually came to know, you know, what people are going through, we find that, you know, everybody has their tensions, everybody has their worries, everybody is going through difficult things in their life. And sometimes some people just have a bad day. And at the end of a bad day, suddenly we happen to come and we do something wrong and they explode. So if you just understand, it's not about me. If you understand this point, then we can avoid taking it personally. And Lakshmana also understood this. He understood that it was because of the concern of Ram she was speaking it. But at that point, it was unbearable for him. And she spoke of it. The second reflection that we can have is that actually this is an opportunity for me to make my relationship centered not just on this person, but centered on Krishna. That means, okay, this person is speaking in a very bad way. And you know, I can hit back at them. I can also speak back at the worst way. But what will please Krishna? Normally, when you consider a relationship, you say, okay, you are speaking like this, I will do like this. I say, tit for tat. You do like this, I will do like that. But that is simply a mundane relationship. A spiritual relationship means we understand that actually we are not just relating with that person, we are relating with Krishna. If you understand that, so in this situation, how can it please Krishna? What reaction from me will please Krishna? If you think that, then our whole perspective will change. Now Krishna also knows. Now Krishna knows how that person is behaving. Krishna also knows how much that person's wanting to hurt us. But Krishna is also seeing. He's in our heart and he's seeing how we are acting. So if you bring Krishna into that relationship, upadrashta, numantacha, Krishna is overseeing and observing everything. If you bring Krishna into the relationship, then we will be able to not just act based on how that person is acting, but we can act based on our principle of loving and serving Krishna. So I say a person is there in a cloth shop, and in that cloth shop, there's attendant. And sometimes when people come to a cloth shop, some customers are very fastidious, very fussy. They look at 100 clothes and they don't take any clothes at all. And the attendants have to, you know, put all the clothes back, maybe iron them. There are a lot of work to do at that time. So they may get irritated by that. But then the attendant knows that actually my salary is not coming from this customer. My salary is coming from my boss. And my boss is watching. There are cameras and my boss is watching. So although I may not make a sale to this customer, if I am courteous, if I am patient, if I am polite, my boss will watch. My boss will observe, my boss will appreciate. Sometimes the attendant may not make any sale, but the boss will tell you, you are a cool person. You know how to handle tough customers. And the boss may actually promote the attendant, although the attendant doesn't make any sense. So sometimes, when we have a conflict, you know, we may not be able to persuade the other person. The other person may behave in very unreasonable ways. But even that is an opportunity for us to grow. Because Krishna also knows that we are going through a difficult situation. And if we tolerate the difficult situation, Krishna is pleased by that. So by bringing Krishna into perspective, we can avoid respond. We have to avoid reacting, vindictive. You did like that, I did. A third reflection that we can have is that actually there are times when I have also spoken in this life. And no, we can think that, okay, it's like in English, it takes two hands to clap. So this person has spoken something like that. If I speak like that, it will make things worse. So let me take a humble position. Let me take a tolerant position. And this is an opportunity for me to exhibit the virtue of humility. See, now humility is something which is often being glorified. But yes, I want to be humble. But how can we become humble? Now, one way when we can actually exercise humility is when someone insults us, someone speaks harsh to us. At that time, the question is not whether they are right or wrong. You know, when people's emotions are high, at that time, it is just not the right time to decide what is right and what is wrong. At that time, the main thing to do is to get the emotional temperature down. When the emotional temperature is high, no rational discussion is possible. Somebody shouts at me, how dare you, I shout back. And each shout actually raises the emotional temperature. And then after that, by the end of it, there's only shouting and no meaning. This becomes an ugly shouting match. So, when we talk about humility, the focus is not on what is right or wrong. It is not that every time somebody makes a false accusation against us, we have no need to defend ourselves in every situation. At that time, just get the emotional temperature down. See that as an opportunity to exercise humility. We get the emotional temperature down, and once that happens, afterwards, things have calmed down, then a rational communication discussion is possible. Then we can sift fact from allegation. At that time, if we think, we want to settle this matter right now. No, we can't settle. All that will matter is that it simply aggravates the matter. So, if we see that as an opportunity for humility. Now, humility has many definitions. One definition of humility is that to not let our ego come in the way of our purpose. Now, my purpose is, okay, I know this person well. This person loves me. I love them. We have a good relationship. And I don't want this relationship to be spoiled because of this one thing. So, I'm not, okay, this person has spoken, made such an accusation against me, spoken such terrible things about me. It's natural for me to be angry. But that anger is often an expression of anger. So, my purpose is to have a healthy relationship with this person. My purpose is to have proper communication. Now, it's not that our emotions, we have to crush them. We have to suppress them. But the point is, we have to make sure that we express our emotions in a way that resolves the issue, not aggravate the issue. Maybe afterwards, when we are calm, when the other person is calm down, we are calm down, we can convey to them how hurt we felt by those things. But at that time, speaking those things, it just makes things worse. So when one person has become emotional, at that time, if the other person is rational, it doesn't work so well. The other person also becomes emotional, it doesn't work at all. So at that time, simply get the emotional temperature down. And then once the emotional temperature comes down, then a rational discussion can be enters. So getting that emotional temperature down is like an exercise in humility. See, all of us have a feeling that I have my self-respect, I have to protect it. Yes, we may have to protect it, but it is not that every single time if somebody speaks something negative, immediately I have to protect. Yes, there's a time for clarification. There's a time for silence. So just stay silent, calm things down. And that way, we can avoid aggravating the wounds caused by small words. By incidental words that are small. Even if they are grievous accusations. So if we do this, we find that many of the turbulences that have happened in our relationships, they can be curbed. That we don't let small things become big. Small things are there. When it's back and forth, this becomes worse. Just calm, just keep silent. And then, that way, we can just cool things down. I communicate a lot with people by emails. So I have a policy that if somebody does something which angers me, then at that time, I just feel, you spoke, I will write such a reply, it will knock you out. And then at that time, if I just try to silence myself, it doesn't work. So I will just write down the reply. I'll write it down, but I make sure I don't mail it. I keep it there for 24 hours, at least. And then, of course, I'm not always successful. Sometimes I just, so when speaking about it, I hope I'll also become more successful. But if I keep it for 24 hours, and then look at what I did. Almost like 50% of the time, after 24 hours, I decide, there's no need to send this reply. The remaining 50% of the time also, when I send the reply, this point is good. This point is too harsh. This point needs clarification. Maybe I'm being too presumptuous over here. I don't know the facts over here. So if I have waited for 24 hours, it's almost never happened that I send the mail as it is. Something I change. And what happens at the time of emotion, so what we speak, that is not the best. That is actually the worst. So our purpose in life is to help each other bring out our best. So sometimes some person is speaking something terrible about me, we understand this is not their best side. This is their lower side. Now when their lower side comes out, let me see it as an opportunity to bring out my better side. If their lower side brings out my lower side, they become angry, I become angry. They become more angry, I become more angry. Then we are just bringing out our worst. And we simply make the situation worse. But if you see that their lower side is an opportunity for me to bring out my better side. Bring out my better side means I won't act impulsively. Let me think, let me calm down. Let me then decide what to do. That way we don't take incidental words too seriously. And we can that way minimize many conflicts. The Prabhupada would say, one's greatness is estimated by the capacity to tolerate provoking situations. So this is when others speak provocatively about us, we can exercise this ability to tolerate, and thus we can move towards authentic greatness, not in an egoistic sense, but in the sense of actually bringing out the good side within us, becoming vehicles for the greatest being God to manifest through us, to become instruments for Him to bring His wisdom, His grace into the world. And thus we can actually become agents by which we bring out our best and we help others also to bring out their best. So if people see, everybody has a conscience. And then when they speak bad, harshly to us, after some time they also realize, I shouldn't have spoken like that. But if they see that we remain tolerant, they will appreciate it. And over a period of time, they will also see, you tolerated at that time. In the future, something you do, I will support it. And gradually we can help bringing out our best side from each other. So I'll summarize. I spoke today about how misunderstandings can happen when people speak incidental words which are very harsh. But if we ascribe intention to our spoken intention, then that aggravates situations. So Sita, in a frenzy of worry about Ram's safety, made a grievous accusation against Lakshman. Because of that, Lakshman left and then Sita was attacked. So when we study the scriptures, we can study them at a literal level, just purify ourselves, at an ethical level to learn how we should act, and at a spiritual or metaphorical level to learn some further symbolic meanings which supplement the literal meaning, not counter the literal meaning. And at the ethical level, we don't judge the characters in the scripture as right or wrong. We understand that they are orchestrated by God, but we can learn what is right action, what is the wrong action. That's why from both perspectives, if we are the person speaking in a harsh way, we can exercise the austerity to regulate our speech. Speak in a way that doesn't agitate others. Even if we are speaking the truth, even if we are speaking the absolute truth, if we are speaking philosophy about Krishna, we need to speak it in a way that brings people closer to Krishna, not away from Krishna. Preaching means when people are afflicted, we are meant to comfort them, not that we afflict the afflicted. So, and of course, preaching also means that if somebody is complicit, we have to afflict them and show them the reality. So, we should speak not just the truth, but the truth in a way that attracts people to the truth. And sometimes when people speak in a harsh way, rather than getting worked up about it, you just let it pass. And three reflections again for letting it pass. First is, to think that it's not about something else is happening in their life because of which they are disturbed. I just happen to be the brunt of the attack. And secondly, you can see that this is an opportunity to express my devotion to Krishna. Let me not act simply based on how the other person is acting, but on how I can be Krishna. And third is, you can see that it's an opportunity to exercise humility. Rather than letting rushing to defend my ego, let me just calm down. And if we, when the other person on the emotional side, if we also become emotional, then things become worse. So our focus, we should try to decrease the emotional damage. And then we can resolve the matter. So Lakshman never held Sita's words against her. So somebody has spoken something in mention, just let them pass. Don't hold them against someone. And that way, we can avoid unnecessary blocks in our relationship. And we can have more fulfilling relationships where we, instead of bringing out the worst from each other, even if somebody else, their lower side comes out, we can bring out our better side. And seeing our example, their better side will also come out. And that way we can help each other to grow, to evolve, to bring out the best within us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.